About to get the hammy treated. Gonna miss the squad tonight. Hashtag Red Nation.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast is also brought to you by MyBookie. Sign up now and get your deposit matched with up to 50% bonus by using the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. And you can find me as always on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. We're going to recap Wednesday, which was a stupid day in the NBA. Just craziness all over the place. Lineup weirdness, injury weirdness, just heaps of stuff going on in the NBA. I'm going to take one of your questions submitted through Twitter, which we do for the question of the day. We're going to have the player spotlight on a very popular rookie as well, and then preview a two-game slate for DFS for Thursday. So
let's get to it.
Don't forget to check out, of course, the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, a podcast for every NBA team and every NFL team. And if you stay tuned in the future, you'll see some other sports appearing there as well. Go and follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at Locked On NBA Net. And you can see all those new podcasts for your favorite team coming out there and get involved. We'll listen to them. Great insight from all those guys hosting those individual team podcasts, of course, started by David Locke, who is the Utah Jazz radio announcer, and he hosts the Locked On Jazz podcast. So lots of great stuff there for Jazz fans. If you want to go and check that out, which I do highly encourage that you do, the monstrous line of the night is also the waiver wire line of the night. And it's one of my boys. It's always good when one of my boys gets one of these awards, and it's DeLon Wright of the Toronto Raptors. DeLon, who, and I'm sure people have said this before, he just looks, and it can be offensive at times to throw a cross-gendered lookalike out there to people, but he looks exactly like Poussey from Orange is the New Black. No offense to Poussey, I don't know her real name, no offense to Poussey, no offense to DeLon, but they look the same. And it's a tough sell. A cross-gendered lookalike is tough. Men versus women. You think I look like a man? You think I look like a woman? No, I don't. You just look the same. And it's not an insult at all. But I'm sure someone's pointed that out. He looks exactly like Poussey with a mustache. So shout out to you, DeLon. 25-13, 5 assists, 4 triples, 4 steals, 1 block, 10 of 15 from the field, 1 of 1 from the line. If you go back and listen to the season preview podcast on Toronto Raptors, I've got no idea why you would, but if you want to go back and listen to that, me and Sean Woodley, the host of Locked On Raptors, we talked a lot about DeLon, and then he bloody went out and hurt his shoulder and had to miss some time. He was great before that, and he's come back and he's killing it. He's pushed Norm Powell out of the rotation pretty much completely. There are going to be nights where he doesn't play the big minutes like he did in this one, but he is fantastic, and we know that Kyle Lowry has a propensity to get hurt in February and March. It's happened, I think, 3 or 4 of the last 5 years. If DeLon slots into an increased role there, 27 minutes a night, he's going to lock down a top 100 position. There's zero doubt in my mind. He can be a top 150, a top 130 guy, even in 20 minutes a game, for his ability to get steals in high bunches, high blocks for a point guard, get assists. And if he starts shooting like this, then it's over in terms of his value. Since he's returned from his shoulder injury, he's the 71st ranked player in just 21 minutes per game, 10.6 points, a 3.5 boards, 2 assists, 1.6 steals, and 0.9 blocks. And that's really one of those key hidden sort of numbers in a point guard. You get 0.9 blocks out of a point guard. If your team averages 0.9 blocks, you're going to win blocks majority of the time. And you're getting it out of your point guard. So then anything you get from the bigs who are 1.2, 1.3, or you got your Miles Turners who are 2.3, 2.4, it's just massive for you. He's shooting 49% from the field in the last month, 50 for the season, 88 from the line, which was a downfall from him over these first two seasons where he was under 77%. And he's shooting 44% from three. Now, I do believe that those three-point shooting numbers will come down. The steals won't. I think the blocks are relatively real. I think he can get actually more assists than what he's got over those last 10 games. And he does have value. Is he a must-own guy? In a 12-team league, I'd probably have to say yes. Just because that ability to get assists and steals, plus if Lowry goes down, I'm not a big advocate of like holding someone just for injury, but he's got value on his own. And then if Lowry gets injured, I said he'd be top 100. He'd probably be top 50, top 40 if he plays 29 tonight. That's how good this guy can be from a fantasy point of view. So he is someone to definitely pay an immense amount of attention to and see if you've got someone that you can drop to add him. But this was a, look, it was a great game, but we do have to factor in a little bit of temperance of the value there, because the last game he played 19 minutes. Still had 2 assists, 1 steal and 2 blocks, so got the value back. The game before that, 29 minutes, 13 and 7 with 2 steals and a block. In fact, he has had at least 1 block in 6 consecutive games in 7 out of his last 8 games. That is stupendous. And 2 blocks in 2 of those games as well. He's had 7 steals over his last 3 games. You know, just big, big numbers continually from D'Lon. Remember how we started the season? He started it off almost as aggressive as this also. So he is a guy I think that you should add in a lot of places. If you look at the per 36 fantasy value, he's the number one ranked player in the last week, averaging 21, 10 and 4, 2 threes, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 59 and 75. So the number one ranked player in per 36 fantasy value over that last over those last 3 games. It's 3 games, but still. When D'Lon Wright's your number one guy, there's something to see there. So go ahead and have a look. Go and grab him and see how it works out for you, because I reckon it'll work out in a pretty decent manner. And Lowry's grabbing his wrist at the moment already. So if he's having problems with the wrist and the Raptors go, you know what, we're going pretty well, maybe we can cut him back a bit. D'Lon's going to step in and D'Lon's going to be good. It's not going to be a smooth ride. There's going to be some peaks and troughs. But even in those games where he scores 5 points or 6 points, you'll get a steal, you'll get a block, you'll get 2 steals, you'll get 3 assists. And that just keeps the value ticking over until he can come in and put the blow up here. Now, I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I say lots of words on this podcast. You're probably aware of that. I don't remember every single word that I said, but I do believe yesterday I said D'Lon normally plays pretty well against the Bulls, and he did again today. So we've got to factor some of that in there as well, that he does have pretty good record against the Chicago Bulls. Because I remember when that draft was on, when the Bulls pick came around, I wanted them to take D'Lon. Now, I don't remember if he actually went, I think he might have gone one pick ahead to the Raptors at pick 21, and then the Bulls took Punch Bob at pick 22. But I desperately wanted the Bulls to take D'Lon at that pick 22 spot. Now, I'm going to tell you about one of the fabulous companies that keeps this podcast in business, and that is the good folks over at mybookie.ag. It's college football bowl season. It's NFL playoffs. It's we're getting stuck into the meat of the NBA season. So it's time for you to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? If you sign up with mybookie.ag today, you get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. Someone asked me the day, what's my favorite cryptocurrency? I have absolutely no idea. I've heard of Bitcoin. I don't know how it works. I've got no idea. Maybe I need to do some research. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. I'm sure you've got the who you're betting on part down pat. No problem. If you want to make money betting on the bowl games, you've got to go to mybookie.ag. They are the only site that I would recommend for you guys. I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it. Check them out for yourself. They have odds on every matchup, as well as in-game live betting on all this season's NFL, NBA, and bowl games. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. If you're going to bet, the only place to do it is at mybookie.ag. The young gun of the night. Under zero circumstances did I think on a 12-game slate that the monstrous line of the night was going to be D'Lon Wright, and that the young gun of the night was going to be Terry Ferguson of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Ferguson, who, let's be honest, has been shitful for for the entirety of this season. He has not been good. He has barely played. In fact, prior to the 33 minutes that he played in today's game, let's work it out, he had played 150 total minutes in the NBA across 22 other games. So, yeah, had barely played. But Terry Ferguson went bananas. He got the start with Andre Robertson out and Alex Abrines dealing with a groin issue. 24 points with 6 triples, 1 rebound, 1 assist and 3 steals on 9 of 12 shooting. He did not shoot the ball well when he was in Australia last season, but ever since arriving in OKC, he has shot fairly well. 54% he shot in the preseason. For the duration of this season, he's at 49%. Limited attempts, but no one really expected him to go out and do this. Now, he is a guy that, if you remember a couple of years back at Hoop Summit, I think he set the record. I think he had 6 triples and a half at Hoop Summit, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is up in, I think it's up in Portland or somewhere in Oregon, where I found out yesterday that you aren't allowed to put petrol or gas in your own car. And I could not believe that I read that story that people there, and then when they introduced a rule at the start of this year saying, oh yeah, you can go and actually pump your own gas. People were freaking out. Oh my God, how are we going to do it? That's ridiculous. We're going to end up smelling like petrol. Have they never done it before? I was stunned. And then I found out that in New Jersey, it's still illegal to pump your own gas. And what year is it? I felt like somebody was just really extracting the urine because it just did not make any sense. But apparently it is true. And that is a massive diversion out from talking about Terrence Ferguson. But with Robertson due to miss at least a couple more games, Abrines now dealing with a groin issue, and it's not like he'd had the trust of Billy Donovan anyway, and Josh Huestis being an absolute offensive zero, maybe we can get a couple of games action out of Fergo. And with only two games on Tuesday, hey, this is a perfect opportunity to stream him in, and absolutely do not expect this level of performance. Don't go anywhere. It's never going to be this level. He's not going to come out and score 24 and hit six triples and get three steals and throw down dunk contest dunks in game. It's just not going to happen. But he can be useful, and he might be just a guy that you can stream in for this one game. Now, it depends who you drop. And you got to make that decision. Like, is this guy really worth it for getting one game of Terrence Ferguson when there's zero chance of this happening again? Maybe. But it's worth having a look at given how well he performed. And you'd have to think with how he played that he will retain that starting job for the next game, regardless of the status of Abrines with his groin. But good stuff for Tezza Ferguson. Big game from him. Good for him to show out in LA. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Well, he'd been pretty hot up until this game, but Pau Gasol is your dart of the night. 0 points, 3 rebounds, and 4 assists. He had no other numbers, no steals, no blocks, no threes. He missed all 4 of his field goal attempts. He only played 13 minutes, and this is one of the concerns we talked about yesterday with Pau and the Spurs guys heading into that back-to-back. He didn't rest, but he barely played. He'd been putting up some really big numbers, but the last couple of games have been a little bit quieter for Pau. He is the 88th ranked player over the course of the season. Last month, he's down to 119th. He's still a guy you want to own in 12s. Probably in 10-team leagues, in a lot of cases, you'll be able to find a better option on the waiver wire. And again, if you assess it accurately or honestly, he's probably going to be your worst player on a 10-team roster, maybe your second worst, and that could be definitely used for streaming. It wasn't the greatest performance from Power, but it was an expectedly bad performance. You're not going to drag him down too much for having that sort of a disappointing time of it. Time for us to now get into the question of the day. Reminder that I will send a tweet out asking for questions of the day each day. And it can be basketball related. It can be fantasy related. It can be life related. It can be food. It can be whatever. Movies, TV, beer, food again. I don't care what it is that you want to talk about. And I'll mix them up. So we had some life questions, some basketball questions, some fantasy stuff. And we've got another fantasy question today, which comes through from Abby Whitman. Now, I know Abby's been listening to this podcast for a few years, one of the very few female listeners that this podcast has. And I don't understand why there just are so few women that are involved in the NBA, well, not even in the NBA, but in fantasy sports in particular. I'm sure that the amount of people of women who watch the NBA is much larger than the percentage of women that actually play fantasy basketball. But I know Abby's been listening to this show for a long time. She's one of those women who is I'm not going to say fan because it makes me sound conceited, but she's someone who does listen to the show quite a lot and one of that small band of the 2% of listeners who are women. So shout out to you, Abby. And your question is, and I know many people have heard this, but I'm going to say it once and for all again. Abby says, what are your thoughts on trade vetoes in standard leagues? You all know the answer. You can tune off out for the next 2 minutes if you don't want to hear me talk about it again. They're bullshit. League vote trade vetoes are bullshit. They should not exist in any circumstance whatsoever. Every trade should be allowed to go through with the commissioner's approval, and the commissioner doesn't need to make a determination on the trade being fair. It's not for him to decide, you know what, mate, you probably lost that trade. I'm going to block it. Not your problem. It's not how it works at all. The only time a commissioner steps in is when he sees a trade of Kevin Durant for Terrence Ferguson. And you go to the bloke and you go, mate, you're taking the piss now, surely. Why are you trading Terrence Ferguson, or why are you trading Kevin Durant to get back Terrence Ferguson? And the guy goes, yeah, you got me. Yeah, this bloke said that I could bang his missus if he let me do this. Like, just whatever. Oh, you gave me $20 under the table and said, oh, give me Kevin Durant and it'll be fine. Most of the time when you confront someone, it comes out. And in that case, you just block it. And even if that guy then doesn't admit it, you just kick his ass out of the league and you block the trade regardless. But if it's a trade where someone comes in and says, I'm going to trade Aaron Gordon for Paul George, You go, oh, it's an outrage, mate. It's terrible. The league, they're all up in arms. What is this bullshit? What is this bullshit? And the person goes, well, actually, I think that you know, George playing next to Westbrook is going to struggle. He's going to continue to struggle hitting his twos. He's not touching the ball as much. Gordon, no Vucevic, is going to have this big usage bump. Look at his threes. He's developing this game. I think that he can be better. And you go, you know what? Not my problem. I think it's a dickhead idea. And I'm not saying that I do think that's a dickhead idea, but you know, you might think that, but it's not your problem. The trade goes through. Oh, but what about competitive balance? Not, who cares? I know you might, oh, it screwed the league. No, it hasn't. This is just, and if someone's making terrible, terrible trades that actually have zero justification, they're cheating. And you can say, oh, that they're not. No, they are. They're cheating. And that is one reason that you don't let those trades go through. But otherwise, a veto is not a tool to reject a trade because it might make someone else better. That's what trades are supposed to do. I get this all the time. People go, oh, is this trade fair? Don't worry about if it's fair. Worry about if you win. Oh, if I offer this trade, is it fair? Why would you want a trade to be fair? Surely you want to win the trade. Oh, maybe it's not fair enough. That's for the other bloke to decide. Dumb shit happens all the time. Someone tweeted me the other day that someone dropped Victor... Yesterday, they dropped Victor Oladipo to pick up Marcus Smart. Dumb shit happens. And you're not here to legislate against stupid. Let it go through. If it happens, it happens. Sometimes I'll see a trade go through and I go, oh my God, what on earth was that? I should have gone after that player. If that guy was going to value him so poorly, I should have done it. But if you're not proactive, bad luck. It's not the commissioner's job, and it's definitely not the league member's job to vote on trades for vetoes. League vote vetoes, get their ass out of here. They are horrendous. I refuse to have any league where that goes on. I'm in one league where that is, but it requires like 15 out of 30 vetoes. If I had have known about that at the time, if I had have paid more attention to it, I wouldn't have joined under those circumstances. But those trades don't really get vetoed. I won't join any new leagues that have that in. Any league that I start won't have that either. It's a bad system. It stifles trading because people are just, oh, everyone, there's, you know, four of them, they're ganging up and they just block every trade that I do. It's bullshit. Commissioner only. Abby, thank you for the question. I wanted to get that off my chest. I feel like I have to do it once a month. It's bullshit, and I've said bullshit probably way too many times, but I'm pretty sure you're aware. I think it's bullshit. All right, we have got 12 games to bang our way through today from Wednesday. It was a busy day. There was just crazy shit all over the place. So shout out to Kyle, who was on Basketball Monster, handling the news, handling the updates until I took over. So that's what normally happens most of these days. Kyle does it, and then I come on in the evening for you guys, the US, and I handle it from there. We have different schedules, of course, depending on days. But he was, we were both on there at that time when all this bullshit was going down, and Embiid was in and Embiid was out, and you know, Spurs starters were changing, and Drummond was rumored out, and we didn't know. There was all this weird stuff. So shout out to Kyle for handling that news and getting it out and doing the updates as quick as humanly possible as weird stuff was coming out that we thought was settled, as the Sixers tweeted out a starting lineup that didn't have Embiid in it, and then next minute, he's in. We will talk about that when we get to the Sixers. The New York Knicks and the Washington Wizards, Mick Beasley, 25 minutes, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks at him. Simple as that. I do fear that when Timmy Hardaway comes back, they won't use him as much at small forward. They won't need as much scoring punch with Hardaway back in that lineup. That could be 2 or 3 weeks away. Add Beasley and just roll with it. Enes Kanter, another poor game in terms of minutes, but 12-4 is still a decent level of production. 18 minutes is infuriating. I would still be holding on to him, but it's not... It's not ideal to see that, again, after that Christmas Day game where he put up 30-odd and 20, and then they've said, oh, well, that's cool, but now you're only going to play 18 minutes a night. Just a weird turn of events. Jeff Hornacek is not a good coach. He did get his cock out in this one, as Kylo Quinn had 13 and 10 in 24 minutes, a steal and a block, and we've talked about cock blowing up quite often. He does this, and then he'll go back and play 17 minutes and have 6 and 5. We know that if he was in a steady 26-minute-a-night role, he would be a must-own guy. I just have zero faith that that's going to be the case. Rugged Ronnie Baker returned after getting his face caved in. He had 4 points in 19 minutes. That's about it. Well, Frankie Ntilikina, I thought we're getting progress from Frank, but turns out no. 7 points in 20 minutes for Frank. Hopefully he can push back up to those upper 20s in minutes, but he's still an okay guy to own. But there are in 10-10 leagues, there are going to be many other options that I'd prefer. And you've got to weigh it up. Where are you? Is it... Do you need desperate wins? Can you go and add Beasley for him now? Can you add, you know, Terry Ferguson for tomorrow? Like, that's a short-term thing, but maybe you need to get these categories up in the short term. Porzingis had 16 and 6 with 2 blocks, and his shooting percentages continue to tumble after a really hot start to the season. The Washington Wizards, Marcin Gortat, 21-8 for Gortat, 9 of 10 from the field. A steal, a block. He's clearly not going to be a 90% shooter. We know that. He's just as likely to play 18 minutes in the next game than he is to play these sort of minutes in this game and to have this sort of a level of production. He's still owned in way too many leagues. He's not a 10-team league guy, and to me, he's not a 12-team league player either. Bradles Beal, 27-4-6 with 3 steals, and he was on fire. The entire Wizards team shot 59% from the field. Beal was all over the place, while Wall had 25-3-9 and a triple one. He was always in line for a big one, and he delivered. While Otto Porter, the efficiency was gone, but still some nice numbers. 3 assists, 3 steals, 1 block with 8 points on 9 shots. Kelly Oubre got into foul trouble, so that left him with only 14 minutes and allowed Markieff Morris to have an 11-11 double-double. Markieff is far from a must-own guy. Let's go on to the next game. It is the Houston Rockets and the Orlando Magic. Just an absolute smashing from the Rockets without James Harden. So we got to see, I guess, how their rotation looks to a degree. But I'm also going to 100% guarantee you that Eric Gordon's not going to play 30 minutes a night. Chris Paul is not going to play just 32 minutes a night. And Trev Ariza is not going to play just 33 minutes a night. So I reckon that Paul's probably got another 4 or 5 minutes in him there. Ariza another 4 or 5 and Gordon another 6 or 7. So we're talking about 17 minutes or so that have to come away from someone. Gerald Green played 28 and Briante Weber played 16. So those 17 minutes are going to have to come away from both of those guys, as are the 20 minutes from Luke Marmute when he eventually returns from that shoulder issue. So you can look at Gerald Green and go 27-6 with 7 triples is brilliant. And it is. And it's definitely worth, he's absolutely someone to grab for Thursday. A brilliant streaming option. But those 17 minutes, do they come off Green's total? Do they come off Weber? And we heard D'Antoni say before the game, he wants Briante in there to run that backup unit behind Chris Paul along with Eric Gordon. So whatever minutes that Paul doesn't play, you're going to see a lot of Weber in there. And that was basically the case in this game, that whenever Paul wasn't on the court, Weber played. So that means that he is going to play. If Chris Paul plays 36 minutes, then Weber's going to play 12. Right, and then your Gerald Green gets the backup minutes behind Eric Gordon and behind Trevor Ariza. And then that's fine for those next couple of games while Marmute's out. But then when Luke returns, then Green's going to be going back and playing just the backup minutes behind Eric Gordon. He's also not going to be a 60% shooter or 70% shooter from three as he was in this game. So while everything looks good there, he could do it. You know, he could do something in terms of similar minutes in the next game against Golden State. I'd be doubtful because it won't be as much of a blowout. He won't shoot that well. And then things will start to come down just because they have to. He's not going to be supplanting minutes off Marmute or PJ Tucker, I wouldn't have thought. Nene, he was scheduled to sit out Thursday anyway, but he got a bone bruise in his knee or a bruised knee, so he's not going to play, and he left this game early. Well, Clint Capella had 21-8 with 2 blocks in his 23, and Ryan Anderson 17-7 in 30 minutes. As for Chrissy Paul, shot horribly, just 3 of 13, but 8-7-13 with 2 steals, and you just can salivate over that line going, man, if he only hit 45% of his shots, that would have been an absolute ripper, while Eric Gordon had 17-5-6, and he is definitely due for a huge, huge run here with Jim out. For the Magic, Lord Alfred had 14-4-4 with 5 steals. The steals are really getting it done for him at the moment. Everything else has been impressive also. The rest of the team was just shitful for the majority of this game, as Gordon wasn't his best game. 16-8. The threes didn't go in this one. He was 2 of 6 from deep. Evan Fournier, 10-5 in 30 minutes. John Simmons, putrid, and then got hurt. 3 points in 15 minutes, didn't play the second half with back spasms. I talked about him ad nauseum about how I don't think he's very good now. I do think that he is going to struggle at times moving forward, and this back injury doesn't help. Mario Hezonja was probably the only Magic guy that played well. 14-9 in 28 minutes for Mario. Played well in the first half, started the second half in place of Simo, and if John has to miss more time, then I would expect Hezonja to get some extra time there. It's probably not going to be 12-team league value, though. While Bismack Biyombo just foul trouble, and yeah, wasn't a good spot for him matchup-wise. 18 minutes, 4-6. He'd been really, really good prior to this. I expect a bounce back. I just don't think he's a very good player. I've talked about that a lot, but he'd been putting up some solid numbers before this game. The San Antonio Spurs and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Spurs were without Manu, they were without Tone Parker, they were without Kawhi, they were without Dan Green. So we had a weird starting lineup that consisted of DeJounte Murray, Bryn Forbes, Kyle Anderson, Pau Gasol, and LaMarcus Aldridge, and then Pau played just the 13 minutes. Murray, he struggled with foul trouble. 4-1 with a block in those 14 minutes, while Bryn Forbes played 41 minutes and only scored the 15 points, which is okay, but in 41 minutes, I would have hoped for a little bit more out of Brynny. Three assists for him there as well. With Green likely to miss a little bit more time, there is a level of appeal for Forbes for deeper leagues, but when Kawhi's back, when Parker's back, when Ginobili's back as well, he's just not going to get anywhere near those sort of shot attempts, and he's going to be nowhere near that effective. Pat Mills had his best game of the year, 26 points in 29 minutes, but not really an add to me, while Kyle Anderson did it again, 14-7, a steal, two blocks. Kawhi will be back for the next game. I think Leonard might then miss the game after that, so that might give Anderson some value there. But overall, he's just not going to get enough playing time to be a consistent 12-team league guy, for as much as I love him, or Davis Bertans. He took over those Pau Gasol minutes and had 13-5 with three triples. He just doesn't seem to miss from three. And I know he was only 3 of 9, but every time he shoots, just go, this is going in, even if it doesn't. He just looks that smooth when he's taking those shots. A big LaMarcus game, 2-24-14. On to the Sixers. Joel Embiid was doubtful. Then he was ruled out. Amir Johnson was announced as the starting center. And then next minute, Joel's just trotting out there going, oh, actually, guys, I'm going to play, and then I'm going to have 6 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 blocks in the first quarter, and end up with 21, 11, and 4, a steal, 4 blocks in 35 minutes with that hand sprain. Yeah, he said he really wanted to get out there and give Brett Brown the victory against Pop. He wanted to play against the Spurs and Pop. Just, it's frustrating. It's surely there has to be some sort of rule instituted in the NBA, like, this is your lineup. This is who is playing. This is part of what I was talking about the other day with, you know, shortening the active list. Here's my 10 guys who are going to play. Here is my starting lineup. You know, knock it down an hour before. These other guys are all inactive. I've decided it, whatever it is. Decide it the day before. Just this sort of bullshit in and outs, like up until 5 minutes before the game. Now, Embiid was announced as in just 20 minutes before the game. So the people who are, you know, having a go, oh yeah, you have to wait till after DFS, like, that's bullshit, because it wasn't the case. It was 20 minutes before, but it's still frustrating, no doubt about that. Benny Simmons also bounced back, 26-5. Well, didn't bounce back, because he was good in the last one, but he had a couple of poor ones before that, 26-5-4 with 3 steals and a block for Simo. Went to the line 15 times and hit 10 of them, so obviously an issue with the free throws, but everything else was looking pretty sexy there. While Bob Cove continues to struggle, since he got hurt, he has really struggled, 7-7. He's not droppable or anything like that, but it's a down moment. While Šarić had one of his poorer performances in recent times, 15-7. In 29 minutes for Dario, we also saw Rishaun Holmes, which is a rarity in a game that Embiid plays. He played 6 minutes alongside Embiid as well, but only 2-1. Yeah, back-to-backs is the only time I feel like you're going to be able to use Rishaun. I still really like him as a player, but it's just not going to happen. There's just too many guys there. Booker, Amir, obviously, Šarić, Covington, Simmons, Embiid, all these guys playing these positions. And Holmes just isn't going to get enough playing time, and holding on to him, hoping for an Embiid injury, as morbid as that sounds. It's just, I don't think it's a good use of a roster spot. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Brooklyn Nets. Jim Butler, 33-4, 2 steals, a block, 39 minutes, got to the line 18 times. He is really, really carrying teams at the moment, carrying this team. Couldn't carry them to a victory in this one, but he's putting up some good, good numbers. Loving having him in the 30 deep league. Andy Wiggins, 17 points and his usual emptiness in the other cats, but the 2 steals are nice. 2 rebounds and 1 assist are piss poor, but some decent scoring numbers there. While Tyus Jones, the minutes are up, and this is what I expect from him in terms of minutes, but only 11 points, only 1 assist and 2 steals. So he continues to bring the steals. I think you've got to look at him more as a steal specialist who can hit some threes, get some assists, and score a little bit. He's been quite up and down. I still think he's a hold. Like, I wouldn't drop him for a Terry Ferguson or anything like that, but I would consider it for D'Lon, and I'd consider it for, say, Mick Beasley, two guys we've talked about already. Townsie had 16-10 in his 40 minutes. Well, it wasn't a good Taj Gibson night. Now, so much of Taj's increased rank this season has been the fact that he's shooting like 7 or 8% higher from the field. And when the shots don't go in, like in this one where he's 1-5, and 3 of 6 from the line, then the line just looks piss poor. 5-7, a steal and 2 block. But if that goes to 12-7 with a steal and 2 blocks, it looks nice. That his elevated field goal percentage was really keeping his numbers up. Gorgui Dieng banged his knee late in the game. He looks all right though. 8-5 with a steal and a block. If he misses time, it's going to be more for Nemanja Bjelica and some more minutes for Taj. Will they ever dust off Justin Patton? Is Justin Patton going to play a single minute for this team? I'd be really interested to see. That was such a dumb pick at the time and hasn't played. On to the Nets. Caris LeVert was out, so that meant more minutes for Spencer Dinwiddie, and he didn't fail to deliver. 26-1-9, four triples, a game winner, looked fantastic. He'd definitely been getting outplayed by LeVert recently, and the minutes had dropped. Without Caris there, he had to hold a larger role, and he did it with aplomb. Jumpin' Joe Harris also got some extra playing time, 17-4 with four triples for Joe. As long as LeVert is out, which doesn't appear like it's going to be a long-term thing, so Harris can have some short-term value there. Well, the Blue Swimmer had 9-8 with a pair of steals and a pair of threes, but that is far from sexy. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had to leave the court at one point. Returned, only played 27 minutes, wasn't his strongest night, but I think everyone wants to know, how did Jahlil Okafor go? His conditioning was done. He's back into game shape. How did he look? Well, he had 2-2 in 11 minutes, and I know he's a 20-10 guy, and you probably can't detect the sarcasm in my voice because he absolutely 100% is not a 20-10 guy. I'll tell you what he looked. He looked very skinny. I'll give him that. But he's not that good. 2-2 in 11 minutes. Quincy Acey outperformed him. Tyler Zeller does what he needs to do. Jarrett Allen played pretty well again. He was literally the worst player on this team in terms of fantasy value in this game. Now, his minutes will probably come up, but he's not running out there 30 minutes a night. I can 98% guarantee you he's not playing 30 minutes a night. Damari Carroll, his ribs were bothering him quite a bit, so he pushed through that, played 31 minutes, shot poorly, but you can tell that's really bothering him, and maybe when LeVert comes back, he will sit out a game or two and push the Blue Swimmer up to the small forward position to enable him to rest those injured ribs. The Detroit Pistons and the Miami Heat, Andre Drummond, sort of out of nowhere. Drummo just was out with what turned out to be a rib contusion. The Heat reporters were reporting, hey, Drummond's out. Heard nothing from the Detroit guys, and then they eventually confirmed that. It doesn't appear to be a serious thing. Stan Van Gundy seemingly, I thought it was quite bus-throwy. I thought he threw him under the bus. I said, oh, there's nothing too serious there. It's really just a pain thing, whether he can play through it. So that's just saying, like, Andre, stop being a soft cock. That's the way I interpreted it. Maybe it's not exactly what Van Gundy meant, but that was a little weird thing to say, I thought, from Stan. So I don't imagine Drummond's going to miss too much time here. With Andre out, Boban started. Everyone who's ready to fire up their Bobans, they're ready in this one. He was a brilliant DFS play, and he smashed through value, no problem there. But his flaws as a player were comfortably exposed. He played 22 minutes, he had 15-9. Three assists and a block. The stats get racked up. There's no one has ever denied that or doubted that. Super efficient from the field. Great from the line. And then got Kelly Olynyk to rip him a new asshole on the other end because he just can't move. He just can't move out quick enough. Olynyk absolutely destroyed him. And that's what's going to limit Boban. And that's why he can't play most of these nights because he just gets roasted defensively. And he really, really struggles. And they do have to really feed him the ball offensively as well. So for us, it might look sexy. And I know I use this term so often, but he's like big man Tony Roten almost, who puts up stats and you go, man, if we gave him 30 minutes a night, he's a top 30 guy. That's fine. He just cannot last on the court for that long. And he doesn't need 30 minutes a night. He needs 22, but he cannot, when everyone's healthy, he can't stay on the court that long. Now, John Lua, the tackle box, I get the feeling that we're not going to see the tackle box again this season. He had some weird quotes. He's got bone spurs. He's dealing with pain. And he's throwing out the suggestion that maybe he's going to need season-ending surgery on his sprained ankle. So when everyone says, oh, it's just an ankle sprain, like this is what the tackle box had, a sprained ankle. We haven't seen him for 2 months, and we might not see him again this year. Sprained ankles can be real assholes, and that's pretty much what's happening to the tackle box now. So that does open up some center minutes, but it's been Eric Morland and Tone Tolliver holding those down because Boban has some pretty significant limitations. I know I say this all the time, but Reggie Bullock will not continue to shoot 60% from the field. He shot 6 of 10 in this game, which equates to exactly 60%. So he made me look dumb once more. 17 points with 5 triples. But when you look at the rest of the line, 0 rebounds, 1 assist, 0 steals, 0 blocks. You, deep down in your heart, you know that he's not shooting 60% from the field. You know that he's not shooting 60% from 3. And when that disappears, you're left with a pile of nothing from Reggie Bullock. So he's fine to own, yeah, as a streaming type guy, but it's literally impossible for this to continue. Lukey Kennard shot really well as well. That won't continue, but I like what Kennard can do in other categories more. He's just not going to get the playing time enough this season. Avery Bradley returned 38 minutes, so definitely no minutes restriction there, but just horrendous in terms of shooting. 6 of 19 from the field, missed both his free throws and had 15, 4, and 4. But if he's on my waiver wire, I would be going to add him. And this is the Ish Smith that leads me to be more cautious with him. His first two games, great numbers. And everyone who said, oh, Josh, you said Ish isn't good, they could have pointed at those two games and said, yeah, Josh, you're a dickhead. You don't know what you're talking about. And some of the time, I don't know what I'm talking about. But this is the ish that you're going to see more often. Now, he can have big games, but he can also have these games where he went 6-5-4, a steal and a block, and he was 3-10 from the field. He's never been an efficient guy throughout his career, has free throw issues, field goal issues, can become too much of a gunner, can play out of control. He should absolutely be owned in all leagues, but that elevated production from those first couple of games was probably somewhat anomalous. Langston Galloway, out of the rotation. A terrible signing at the time. Looks even worse now. Dwight Bikes took over the backup point guard role and had 14-2-4 and looked actually better than Ish Smith in this game. So Langston, while he would have been an interesting guy to own or to pick up in a deeper league on the back of that Reggie Jackson injury, he's not playing at all with Avery Bradley back. Well, he's not going to play backup two because you've got Bradley, Kennard, Bullock doing that. If he's not going to play backup one, then he's just not going to play. And that's clearly not ideal. Onto the Heat, Olynyk I talked about before, he was brilliant. 25-13 with 3 triples, 73% shooting. You know I'm a big Olynyk fan. I have been really worried about what's going to happen with his minutes, but it wasn't a problem here, even with Jim Johnson back. Yes, the Jim Johnson song. Even with Jim Johnson back, Olynyk played 36 minutes. He looked great out there, and it was Hassan Whiteside that really suffered, and Bam Adebayo as well, who only played the 10 minutes along with Mickey 6 minutes. Now, what is Olynyk going to do? Is he going to be a starting power forward and play 32 a night? Is he going to play 20 a night? Are they going to include Adebayo in that rotation? Will they continue to limit Whiteside, who played only 17 minutes after picking up a couple of early fouls? And this is the concern I did have with Whiteside, and I thought my concern was maybe unfounded, because in that second game back, he played 29 minutes. I went, all right, I'm wrong. They're not going to limit him. He's going to go back to those minutes. I said that when he comes back, I fear that he might only be a 24 or 23 minute a game guy because of his deficiencies offensively. His defense hasn't quite been as good, and the way that Adebayo and Olynyk and Johnson had played in his absence means that they wouldn't need to rush him out there for big minutes. And that actually happened in this game. It didn't the game before, so I can't get a full grasp of how it all works with Hassan, but it's not looking ideal. I'll put it that way. My boy Joshy Richardson, 22 points, 5 assists, 5 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. He just goes on these incendiary streaks where he's ludicrously hot, and it just adds to what else he can do. The steals, the blocks, the assist, comfortably a must-own guy. Somehow, according to Yahoo, owned in under 70% of leagues, which is ridiculous. He's a must-own player in every single league. While the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, not dead yet. 24-5-13 after a string of piss-poor games. That's 2 massive ones for Dragic in a row, while Tyler Johnson, just the 2-3-3 in 33 minutes. I spoke about him in the player spotlight last week. I think it was last week, maybe early this week. And I'm not a massively high fan of his. And I thought he'd have some value while Waiters was out. This was obviously not a great one. I would still hold him if I added him. The Duke had 12 points and 8 rebounds. That's Wayne Ellington in his 34 minutes. The Cleveland Cavaliers, the Boston Celtics. Jay Crowder returned to Boston in his revenge game, and he had 6-9-2 on 2-of-12 shooting. Make sure you notch that down. Just write it down in your revenge game logbook. But maybe you could say, oh, it's because he didn't have his mate next to him. Isaiah Thomas sat out. Yeah. LeBron, 19-7-6.
LeBron James.
The Cavs. LeBron shot 53% from the field, and the Cavs shot 34% as a total team. LeBron was fine. They just got smashed, really, in this game. The Plumber had 10 points in 21 minutes. That's J.R. Smith. Kyle Korver had 15 points, all from three, so 5 triples there. He's an interesting 3-point streamer. That's it. Jeff Green played 29 minutes in the blowout, while Chetty Osman, Channing Frye, they were back into the rotation here with Isaiah Thomas out. Now, in the next game, Thomas is going to be starting. Kevin Love also left this game with an ankle injury. He was just horrible. 1 of 11 for 2 points in 14 minutes, but he said he will be fine. He'll be ready to go on Saturday. So that's a sigh of relief can be breathed by his fantasy owners. On to the Boston Celtics. Terry Rozier. This is a man whose career true shooting percentage is worse than Marcus Smart's. He had 20 points on just 12 shots, hit 4 triples, had 4 rebounds, 3 assists and a block. He is really, really good. He's a super aggressive rebounding guard. The problem being is that when everyone's healthy and everything's cracking and Kyrie Irving doesn't play just 23 minutes, then the minutes for him are going to be a tough sell. But he was absolutely fantastic in this one, and he's a brilliant 14-team league guy, and I actually think he's got some significant dynasty potential. Al Horford 11-9-3. Yeah. Jaylen 14-8-4. Hit all three of his free throws. So I think that's probably the biggest positive there. While Marcus Smart, a strong game from him as well. 15-4-4 with a steal. Three triples. Nothing has changed about my opinion from him. The points are always a bonus. The other numbers are nice. Let's check in on Jason Tatum, who played just 28 minutes. He had 15-5-2, and that looks good on the surface, but my beard's smiling because he went 1 of 3 from 3, and over the last 7 games, he is a 30% three-point shooter. And this brings me to Jalen Rose and my disdain for former players in general, except for Brent Barry, being TV announcers. With I think it was Michelle Beadle that said to Jalen Rose, yeah, Jason Tatum is shooting 47% from three this season. He leads the NBA. Do you think he can keep that up? And Jalen said, yeah, I do. Yeah, I think he can keep that up because, you know, from high school to college, he improved his three-point percentage. And from college to the NBA, he's improved it. So he works hard. So yeah, he can keep up 47%. Jalen, he can't. He can't. Nobody can shoot 47% from three. Not a rookie. This sort of thing is just, it can't happen. Like, explain that he's going to drop off. So when did he miss some shots? Oh, man, he's shit. Like, it's just naturally going to happen. He was never going to continue to shoot 50%. We're seeing him down at 47. He's below 47 now. He's at 24% over his last four games, 30% over his last seven games. Like, the drop-off was always going to come. This is a guy who was a 34% shooter in college. College players don't go to the NBA, have the line extend, and then shoot 16% better over the course of an 82-game sample. It just does not happen, so expect regression. Tatum's been very, very good this season, we know that. But that sort of inanity is just, it's ridiculous. Marcus Morris started in place of Aaron Baines because Brad Stevens sort of views Morris as somewhat of a LeBron stopper. That's fine. But he had 3-4 in 22 minutes. He is not a fantasy option. He is not a 10-teamer. He is not a 12-teamer. He might be a 14-team league guy. But man, this guy needs 35 minutes and the ball in his hands with high usage to be even sniffing 12-team leagues. And he's not going to do it. Shemi Ojeleye returned as well and played minutes and didn't put up stats, which has been the story of his rookie season. The Pacers, they are getting their asses kicked every game without Victor Oladipo, pretty much. I think they've lost 4 of the 5 games by over 10 points. Another ass kicking here. Lance Stephenson started. I feel like Nate McMillan, every game goes out and threatens, oh man, yeah, I'm probably going to change the starters up. Yeah, it's just I might change the starters. Things aren't working. And then doesn't. It's like just continual empty threats. Oh, if you don't do your homework, I'm not going to give you dinner. Oh, Dad, I need my dinner. No, mate, got to do your homework. And then you end up giving your kid dinner anyway. That's what it feels like Nate McMillan's doing. Mate, I'm going to change the starters. If he's a shit. Nate, we lost by 20. Sorry, coach, we lost by 20. Oh, that's all right. You're a good boy. You can keep starting. Stop threatening it. Do it. This is at least twice in the last week that he's threatened to change the starters and hasn't done it. We'll see if anything happens here. Stevenson had 15-7-5, so that's decent enough. While Oladipo was out, while Daz Collison had 17-2-2 with 3 steals on his usual high efficiency. Everyone's out for Miles Turner's blood. He is struggling. We're aware of that. 24 minutes for him. 9-6-2. Still had a block. I think there is still an issue with his concussion. Concussion symptoms can linger for a long time. That's not excusing everything about the way he's playing. And he's had some decent games, you know, mixed in there since returning from that concussion. But I think there is still a problem at times. He's not playing the best. He still had 7 blocks in his last 4 games. So there's still something happening there. But the last 3 in particular have been poor. Shooting poor, not enough minutes, not getting rebounds. Really bad stuff from Miles. He's the 50th ranked player still. He's 55th over the last month. But in the last 6 games, he's down to 108th, averaging just 12-5 in 27 minutes. This is as buy low as you can get on Miles Turner. And when people say to me, oh, yeah, and I say, look, go after them. Go after the Miles Turner owner because there's so much hate out for him. Oh, he's trash. He's terrible. He's useless. What's wrong with this guy? He's got no heart. He's got no passion. He's got no fire. He's terrible. He's got no balls. He's a pissy weak man. So send the offers out because people get irrational. I hear it all the time. I tell you about it all the time. They get irrational. This guy is useless, man. He's terrible. Get rid of him. So you can therefore go and throw a good offer at him. Robin Lopez. How about that? Julius Randle. You want that offer? Sure. Daz Collison. You want Lance Stevenson? Have him. Throw someone at him. A buy low on Miles Turner is not Josh Richardson, who's been exceeding his value over the last month and can be a top 50 guy on his own. a buy low is not Kevin Love on Miles Turner. That's not a buy low. Because there is a chance that maybe Turner, you know, struggles and his minutes are kept low and he has another injury or he just can't get it going over this second half. There's a chance of that. When you do a buy low, you are taking a level of risk, but it's not a massive risk. You're going, well, I think that this is absolute worst case scenario. So let's see if someone believes he's going to stick at this level, let's deal with it at this level. Let's throw Pau Gasol. Let's try, who's another guy that we can throw out there? I'm trying to think of other big men that we can throw out there as options. Let's try Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Huh, who knows? Let's try, who's another guy that I can think of? Let's try Bismack Biyombo. Hey, Biyombo's getting your boards and blocks as well, man. You never know. Don't offer Kevin Love. Don't offer Aaron Gordon. Don't offer these top 30 players. Don't offer Paul George. It's not buying low. I know he's been bad. But I have confidence that he'll be better. And I think you can get value. We'll get him for value. Domantas Sabonis was really good. He has super efficient, 77% from the field. 24 points, not much else, just the two boards and one steal. I think that, you know, people are saying like they're calling for him to start over him. I don't think that that's a realistic thing. I think the defense would really, really suffer with Sabonis out there. He's been impressive this season, no doubt, and he's absolutely worth grabbing in 12-team leagues, but I'm not sure he's going to stick as a 30-minute-a-game guy. Corey Joseph, 10-7-6 in his 32 minutes, while Boyan had 13-3-3, and Thad Young, just another. He's been piss poor as well. So you want to? It shows how good Victor Oladipo is, though. Without Oladipo, the rest of this team is just really struggling. Thad is outside the top 200 over the last 2 weeks, averaging 6.5. Still a top 100 guy for the season, and I'd be pretty comfortable about picking him up if someone dropped him. But it's not a good run of things, of course. On to the Bucks. Well, they didn't need to play their players big minutes, so that's a relief. Yanni still had 31, 10 and 5 with a steal and a block, and Brogo got 32 minutes, 17, 2 and 5. That's always a relief, but it's always confusing to go, well, DeAndre Liggins hasn't been playing. Let's say, oh, there we go, 23 minutes for DeAndre Liggins. Good to see him back in. Jason Terry didn't touch the floor at all, so it wasn't the fact of Liggins just playing the second half. It was Kidd screwing up that rotation again and changing things up. Sterling Brown back in there, the sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick. And so just that constant rotation of those guards can be frustrating. I have to talk a little bit about Matt Dellavedova, who everyone apparently hates and thinks is the dirtiest player in the world. And I just think he's just who he is. I have this argument with people all the time. I don't think there's any dirty players in the NBA. I don't see anyone going out there doing dirty things. I don't think there's any dirty players in the NBA. I just don't see it. But regardless, my point is that Dellavedova now has 28 assists in his past three games and two turnovers. He had 9 assists here, 8 points with 2 triples in only 17 minutes. If you need assists streaming, Dally might be a man. He's handling the ball a ton in that second unit. And it's clearly worked the last 3 games. So let's see how that goes. Bledsoe, only 28 minutes, 7-1-5. The Toronto Raptors and the Chicago Bulls. We spoke about D'Lon already, but let's go to DeMar DeRozan, who hit another 5 threes. It's 35, 3-6 for DeMar, 3 steals. I think you have to declare that the threes is real now. I don't think you can deny them. I don't think you can say, well, it's just a short-term fluke. I think you have to look at these threes and go, well, he's worked on it. He's comfortable taking them, and they're going in. He's the 9th-ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Now, he is hitting 52% of them in that time, and I have zero confidence that that will continue. But I would be stunned if he finished with less than 1 3 per game as the season goes on. And at this point, I'm going to be pretty stunned if he finishes with a three-point percentage of under 34%. He's shooting 37 at the moment. He was 27 last season. So there is a huge value here in what DeRozan's doing. And you cannot praise him enough for just how good he has been. And the amount of fantasy value he's giving you is obviously just clearly immense with what he's doing. Super stuff from him. Jonas Valanciunas, I thought, you know, good opportunity. He plays well against the Bulls. Let's see what Casey does. And no, 18 minutes, 0 points. That's real tough. It's real tough to hold him, especially with Jakob Poeltl continuing to outplay him. Now, Poeltl is a guy who I'm really interested in long-term in Dynasty. I've talked about this already. I love what he does for Dynasty. I think he can be a fairly impactful player. I think that if you need to make a drop in a 12-team league and you've got JV, I think you have to consider doing it. Like, I just, nothing is going to change my mind, or nothing is going to change, I don't think, in Casey's mind, to make Valanciunas all of a sudden play 27 a night or 25 a night. It's just, it's going backwards. It continues to go backwards, especially with Poeltl playing as well as he is. It feels like it's going to be tough for him to get, for him to get his numbers up to a level that's going to make him a consistent top 100 third. It's tough. It's annoying. It's frustrating. We know that he can do it when he plays, but I just don't think that he is going to be able to get anywhere near enough minutes to be that guy. Unfortunately, for all the Jonas Valanciunas fans in the house. Anything else here for Toronto? Yeah, not a huge amount. Said Norm Powell out of the rotation. He played 3 minutes only. The Jedi, OG Anunoby, went from 30 minutes to 16. He had 3 and 3. I love what he's doing. He's advanced that to fantastic. There's just nothing happening for fantasy. I think he's probably 2 years away from being a really solid top 100 fantasy contributor. Kyle Lowry, I touched a bit on him earlier about having that sore wrist and flexing it and wearing like a had a brace on it at some point. So it is something to watch. I don't think we need to get overly worried about it, but there is always concern with him, especially in that wrist. On to the Bulls, Lowry Markkanen, 22 and 12, two triples. Big night from him, while Nick Mirotic only got the 26 minutes, 20 points though, three triples, five rebounds, two assists, and took 17 shots. So he did it while not being overly efficient, and that's always a great sign, taking up a lot of usage. Because you know who didn't need big usage and should never have had it in the first place? And that's Justin Holiday, the man who Fred Hoiberg anointed as the go-to scorer. He's actually been much better when he doesn't have to have that role. He was 26 and 4, six triples on just 10 shots, shot 70%. Great stuff from Holiday, and he's been much more efficient lately, really starting to rein in the just ludicrous shot selection that he was taking, because it was never his role and it was a bad idea to put him in that role. This wasn't a good Chris Dunn game. 2 points on six shots. Again, these sort of performances are what makes me think, you know what, he's not good yet. He's showing good things, but I don't think he'll ever become a star. But when you give me five rebounds, eight assists, two steals, and a block, that's enough for fantasy. That's bringing what you can do in those other categories. And then when the shot falls, it's an added bonus. So not saying anything about dropping him there, but it wasn't his greatest game. While Denzel the Hammer Valentine had 14 and 7 with two triples and a steal. He has looked much better recently as well, at the expense of David Nwaba. But I don't think we can feel overly confident about the Hammer there. Now, Zach LaVine is practicing at the moment. He's probably going to get into games at some point next week for the G League team, and then look to play a couple there, and then come back to the Bulls. Be on a minute restriction, be on back-to-back restriction as well. I think he's going to have an impact on one of Nwaba, Holiday, or the Hammer. Probably going to be the Hammer. And those guys, Holiday and Valentine, were going to lose any sort of semblance of 12-team value. I don't think it impacts Chris Dunn a massive amount. It might improve Dunn's efficiency, and that can be an added bonus. I don't think it's going to be too much of a negative impact. It might also decrease some of the shots for Markkanen and Mirotic. But I don't think it's going to be, it's not going to be a huge deal in terms of, Dunn's value. It's more going to be Holiday, the Hammer, and Waba to a lesser extent. The Golden State Warriors and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks, man, I don't know how they're continuing to play as well as they are, but they are. Curry hits the game-winning three for the Warriors. 32, 5, and 8 with six triples. Super efficiency. He's great. Durant had 25, 12, and 6 with four blocks. Also pretty good. And Klay had 25, 5, and 4 with three triples. Draymond, who was questionable heading into the game, played 38. He had 18, 11, and 6, a steal, a block, three triples. That is just such a standard Draymond Green game, so you're pretty happy about that. While Pat McCaw took on a lot of Andre Iguodala's and Omri Caspi's minutes, he had 22 minutes, 7 and 5, but he's got very, very limited appeal. I'm not going to talk about Jordy Bell here because he is going to be the player spotlight, so we'll talk about him a little bit later on. It's safe to say it wasn't his greatest game, but we'll talk about him when we get to the player spotlight later on. On the Dallas Mavericks, Dwight Powell, 28 minutes, 21 and 8, two triples, two assists, one steal. A huge game from Powell. Now, I don't know if you guys listen to much NBA draft stuff, but I do suggest you go check out the Stepien Ode to Odin draft podcast with Kyle and Sean on there most of the time. Well, Sean's on there all the time. Cole's on there most of the time as well. And I apologize. I think it was Sean who was talking. Sean Derenthal. I think it was Sean that was talking the other day about ways to have some level of prediction, I guess, on the star level of players in their career. And it's by looking at their box score plus minus in their third and fourth year. And if they've got a significant box score plus minus, and if you've got a box score plus minus of over two, you're a very, very good player, most likely. So looking at the averages in their third and fourth year, the box score plus minus, generally, it's not a foregone conclusion. I'm sure there's much more intricate stuff in there. I've got to talk to Sean about it, actually, in terms of predicting value of these guys moving forward. But Dwight Powell is currently sitting on a pretty sexy box score plus minus. And this is his fourth season now, unless I'm completely incorrect with that. That's another reason why, yeah, Jakob Poeltl, he's got a stupid high box score plus minus for a second year guy as well. Yeah, this is Powell's fourth season, and his box score plus minus, I think it's over two. So he's putting up some good numbers there. So that gives you the idea that maybe he can be an interesting player. Last season, he had a huge run of high efficiency with big defensive numbers. You'd have to say he's locked in a position clearly ahead of Nerlens Noel. He's getting more minutes than Maxi Kleber at the moment. He's outplaying Salah Mejri. It was a perfect matchup for him, but he has really blossomed in his fourth season, Dwight Powell. He's not a 12-team league guy just yet, but he's definitely someone to keep an eye on. And if he might not be under the radar after this game, but there might be some dynasty upside there. I think there's definitely some dynasty upside there for him. Dennis Smith, the shooting wasn't great, 6 of 18, but 14, 2, 8, a steal, 2 blocks, good numbers. He's going to be a big, big player, this guy. I'm really, really excited to see what he's going to bring in the coming months. Well, JJ Barea, again, elite assist numbers, 13, 4, and 7 in just the 26, while the Pencil had 18, 5, and 4, and Wes Matthews had 22, 5, and 4. Strong numbers from both those guys. I don't consider Wes a must-own 12-team league guy. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Utah Jazz. Tone Davis, 29, 15, and 4. 3 steals, 1 block, 1 triple. Big numbers. Boog left the game with a sprained ankle, returned and had 19 and 11 with 2 steals and a block. While Drew Holiday had 24, 6 and 4 in 30, 6 and 5, sorry, in 37 minutes and shot the ball extremely well. Rajon Rondo.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep. Only 15 minutes for Rondo here. Weirdly had 12 points, which is not something you expect from him. 3 rebounds and 3 assists, but the 15 minutes is a concern. He had 30 in the last game. He's like a yo-yo in terms of his playing time. He's still someone you have to own, but it's more often than not, he's playing low minutes. And that is definitely a concern with his value. Etwan Moore played 33 and had 6, 2, and 5. He is not a 12-team league guy. So if you do own him in a standard league, I would consider his spot a streaming one. The Jazz, they made the change from their starting lineup. Tarbo had started the previous two games at power forward, and he'd played over 30 minutes. In this one, he was a DNPCD, and the previous DNPCD, Jonas Jerebko, he started and played 19 minutes and had 7 points. So I guess it was to match up against the bigger front court. But then giving 29 minutes for Joe Johnson doesn't make a ton of sense, because Joe's not that big. He's a similar size to Tarbo. He's a lot stronger. He's a lot more solid, but he's not that tall. So that move in its entirety didn't make a ton of sense. 20 and 7 in 29 minutes for Joe, probably his only good game so far of the season. Nothing there for 12. Same with Jerebko, same with Tarbo. Ravishing Rick Rubio, another strong game. If you said to me and ignored the minutes column that Rubio had 11, 2 and 7 with 4 steals, you go, yeah, that's all right. I'm happy with it. That's sort of what I drafted him for. The 24 minutes looks annoying, but those numbers are fine. And he's had 2 strong games in a row now, probably a couple more than that, actually. And still should be a 12-team league guy. The Don had 24, 3, and 2. The efficiency wasn't there for Mitchell, but still just bludgeoned his way to 24 points, while Favors had 11 and 9, and Jingle and Joe dished out 5 assists. I can understand that people don't want to own Joe Ingles in 12-team leagues. Those 5 assists are still really valuable, but he's probably your worst guy on your team, so if you need to drop, consider it an option. The Phoenix Suns and the Denver Nuggets was always going to be a terrible situation for Phoenix heading into Denver. Altitude, second half of a back-to-back with a terrible team, and they got spanked. TJ Warren had 13, 5, and 5, 4 steals and a block. And when you get a TJ Warren game with 5 assists and 4 steals, I think you should count yourself very lucky. I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. You got to own Marquise Chris now. As much as I don't like the guy as a player, he has definitely improved, and his numbers are there. 31 minutes, 16, 4, and 1, 5 steals, 3 triples. Must-own player. Joshy Jackson was a DNPCD yesterday, so of course he played 25 minutes here, 14, 2, and 2. A decent showing from him, actually a much more in-control showing from Jackson. Definitely not going to be a massive contributor this year for fantasy, but it was a good showing. Well, Devin Booker, 30 minutes for Book, 17, 2, and 5. They did say they wanted to reduce his minutes. I wasn't sure it was going to go as low as this, but I don't think we need to be too concerned. Well, Tyler Ulis, 15 minutes. Isaiah Cannon, 25 minutes. Just nothing to see with those guys at all. But I want to talk a little bit about Greggy Monroe.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
And not just so I could play that. He played 35 minutes, had 16, 10, and 4. There are a lot of things that don't make sense here. He is the best centre on this roster. He is better than Alex Len. He is better than Tyson Chandler. I understand they don't want to win games necessarily, and I understand that Greg Monroe is a free agent after this season. I also understand that Alex Len is an unrestricted free agent after this season. I know that Tyson Chandler's got more years on his contract. Greg Monroe is good. For as much shit that he gets given, he is good. And he produces, and he's a much better defender than what he's given credit for. He's like the American version of Nikola Mirotic. He can defend. He's not a great defender. He's not a good rim protector, but he can defend. He can play in space. He's active in passing lanes. He's good with his hands. But what I don't understand is you don't play this guy at all. Like, he just doesn't play until you get to the second night of a back-to-back, and then you go, well, mate, you haven't been good enough to play at all, but now we're going to start you. And not only are we going to start you, but we're going to play you 35 minutes, and we're going to just feed you the ball pretty much at every opportunity. So for one game a month, mate, you are our offensive focus. And don't anyone come back to me with trade showcase, because it is a load of shit. It is bullshit. It is bullshit. This thought process doesn't make any sense. If Alex Len is your guy getting majority of minutes most nights, and Len was not good in this game, but he only played 9 minutes. There's just no continuity. There's no common sense. Greg, you're not playing. You're not playing at all. You know what, mate? You're our best player, so can you go do something for us in this one game in 3 weeks, please? Oh, by the way, you're not playing again now until the next back-to-back, and I think the Suns only have 5 more back-to-backs this season. Great stream option. Shit guy to own with this sort of bullshit continuing. Yeah, it was pretty nice. 36 points for Gaz Harris, 3 triples, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. 82% is an absolute monster. Just pipped for the monstrous line of the night by D'Lo. While Nikola Jokic, oh, I want to get his minutes down, 36 for him, 14, 9, and 8 with 2 steals, while Baby Neck had 17, 7, and 4. So, in essence, in a 23-point victory, Michael Malone, we've got to use our bench more, mate. We've got to, the doc, we've got to bring our reserves into it more. The only guy that seemed to cop it was the Blue Arrow. Yeah, cool. For whatever reason, I've got no idea, because he had been playing fantastically. He wasn't great in this, but he clearly wasn't terrible. 13 points for Jamal, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block on just 11 shots. Mason Plumlee, 7, 8, and 6, had those 5 blocks, so there's some nice numbers there, but more of a 12-team league guy. With Murray only playing those 26 minutes, we had Manny Moutier get 2 minutes. Cool. We had Farton Will Barton play just 20. Now, he was ill. So that limited him. 12, 3, and 6 for Barton. Still hold on to him. Well, Malik Beasley, he came in and took some of those backup shooting guard minutes so that Barton could play primarily as the backup point guard. So Beasley had 10 in his 16 minutes. And we had a showing of Ken Faried. 7 minutes, played in the first quarter. Only 7, 4, and 2. And Malone made such a big deal. Darrell Arthur came to me and he said, I think that you should play. I think you should play Ken Faried. You should get him in there. And Malone, being just the magnanimous bastard that he is, yes, told that story. You know, Darrell's such a great leader. He came in, sacrificed himself because I said I wanted to expand the rotation. And Darrell came in and said, you know, Coach Malone, Doc, I think you should play Ken Faried. And Malone, recounting this story, tells that part and says, oh, but I was going to do it anyway. Good on you, mate. Good on ya. Oh, great advice from Darrell, but mate, I didn't actually need it because I was going to do it anyway, mate. So thanks, but no thanks. Oh, seriously. Trey Lyles, 16 and 11 in 27 minutes, just keeps churning out the numbers, keeps putting them up. And former Malone favorite, Torrey Craig, only 13 minutes. That's remember that was weird when he played 30 minutes a night or 37 minutes a night, and now you can't even crack 15. Just more weird stuff from the doctor. The Oklahoma City Thunder, this was an absolute pantsing of the Lakers. We talked about Terry Ferguson already. Georgie had 24, 2, and 3 with 3 steals. Russ had 26 and 12. Mallo had 21 and 6. And Steve-O Adams had 12 and 6. But realistically, what the hell are you getting out of this game? It was just an ass-kicking pretty much from the start. On the Lakers side of things, Brook Lopez returned. Kyle Kuzma was fine. But we didn't have Lonzo Ball back, who woke up a little bit stiff in the shoulder, but he's likely to be back for the next game. Let's check on what Brook did. He played 16 minutes and had 10 and 5 with 2 triples, almost exactly what he was doing before the injury. Not rushing to grab him by any stretch. Jordy Clarkson, 21 minutes, 11, 1 and 2. I couldn't have stressed it more often about Clarkson is the high usage, high efficiency was never going to continue. The high usage is continuing. He just can't hit a single friggin' shot at the moment. I believe over the last 2 weeks, he's shooting like 32%. From the field, and with Lonzo Ball out and you can't get more than 21 minutes, the future is very, very dim for Jordy Clarkson. I don't think he is that good of a player. I don't think he's that good of a fantasy option. I think that if you're in a 10-team league, I wouldn't be holding on to him. And even in a 12-team league, I don't think he's going to become a must-own or going to remain a must-own guy. Julius Randle remained starting at centre alongside the future MVP. 9-5 for Randle in 21 minutes, while Kuzma had 18-3 with 2 blocks and 3 triples. So solid games from both of those guys. The return of Lopez adds another man into that 4-man front court mix, meaning that we've got to really watch what happens with Randle. I think Kuzma's minutes are going to be pretty safe, but we've got to check what's happening with Randle. While Josh, the Hitman Hart, in his 19 minutes had 6-2, didn't play much until right at the end, but of course with everyone returning and now Lonzo back in action for that next game, yeah, the Hitman's going to be really tough to be a 12-team league guy. For as much as I love him, it is going to be a tough ask or tough sledding for him to get through to that. That covers all 12 games from Wednesday. I'm going to take a break because I'm losing my voice, and I'm going to come back with a DFS preview for the 2 games for Thursday, and of course, we're going to look at the player spotlight, which is Jordy Bell of the Golden State Warriors. Before I do that, we're going to go to a song by... Who's the song from today going to be? It's going to be called Wristwatch by Jake McKelvey and the Countertops. So this is Wristwatch, and then I'll be back to do a player spotlight and talk some DFS.
I'm sick of the landlubbers, I'm sick of the tan lovers, the tight eyes, the tired eyes, and the rest. So I'm going out to see what the water makes of me, or if there is just a lubber in my chest. It's not about cattle, I'm sick of committing, so I might as well straddle the line between starting and quitting. And if they don't commend me, they won't get off easy, 'cause it's hard for me, I guess. So the song negates my bitterness, and this silly situation is hit or miss. My love for you is nearly gone, between a thorn in my side and a water bitten ride. I will take the one with more wide open sky. And if they publish me ever and I get what is coming about my endeavor and not about the fact that I'm running a magazine.
All right, guys, let's get back into this action, and we're going to talk player spotlight now. I'm going to look at everyone's favorite Golden State rookie, and that is Jordy Bell, the big man out of Oregon, who has been, I guess, somewhat of a sensation this year. Of course, I've given the Bulls innumerate amount of shit over them selling him. Not only the fact that they sold him, and people can say, oh yeah, you sold the pick, man. The Bulls weren't going to pick him. And that's part of the problem. The fact that the Bulls draft board was literally empty at that point, and they looked down and went, oh, there's no other players we've scouted, so you might as well take the pick. That is absolutely horrible. I can remember, and you maybe remember, me talking with Sam Vecenie on this podcast. We talked about Jordan Bell as being this guy that can step in and be an above-average defender immediately and going to have value as a player that gets picked in the 20s. And when he slid, it was ridiculous to me, and clearly he should have gone much higher than that. He is currently this season the 137th ranked player in fantasy in just 15 minutes, but more instructive to have a look at is the last month. Over the last 14 games, he's played 21 minutes a game, and he is the 77th ranked player in that time frame. And you look at it and go, well, how is that possible, Josh? He's averaging 7 points. And it's not all about points. And in a points league, it's a different story for Jordy Bell. His value is much lower. 7 points, 5 rebounds. But 3 assists is a positive. 1.1 steals, 1.4 blocks, big numbers there, and shooting 60% from the field. Now, he was at about 72%, but recently, as his role has increased, his efficiency has dropped. So he is, yeah, been putting up those numbers in the blocks, the steals, the field goal percentage category, and getting more assists than what you'd probably expect as well. So that's where his value is really coming from. A lot of people, again, really, really excited about this guy, and you have to temper a level of expectation. Man, he's second half of the season, he's going to play 25 minutes a night. That's not real. I don't believe that at all. I've seen that written many places because people put the standard rookie spin on it, and that happens for many, many rookies, is that as the season progresses, the teams want to check them out and they want to develop them. But this is the Warriors we're talking about here. We're not talking about a team who's going nowhere and they go, oh, might as well unleash a rookie. They've got a pretty set rotation. He's not taking Draymond Green's minutes. Is he going to take some of Zaza's minutes? Zaza plays 13 a game. Is he going to kick David West out of the rotation? No. He's already removed JaVale McGee out of the rotation. Kevon Looney's out of the rotation. He's getting these minutes anyway. They're not going to just start, oh, we're just going to unleash Jordan Bell and start playing him 27 a night. I think that if they started him over Zaza on a permanent basis at center, I don't think it's a bad move. I think it's a pretty solid move. But I don't think we should be looking at Jordan Bell and going, well, he's going to definitely play 25 minutes down the stretch here. It could happen. I just don't think it's going to. In saying that, if this dude gets 20 minutes a night, he's a guy you own. Because of that ability to swing the blocks, the steals, the field goal percentage, provide assists, be a solid rebounder without hurting your free throw percentage, that combination of things is really valuable. If you're punting points, he becomes even more valuable. But you need to look at it, how it affects your team. Can you get a guy that's going to average 6 points per game? Is that going to really harm you? It might not. But those other numbers are super sexy. And he was a guy that translated unbelievably well from his college numbers. If you have a look what he did in Oregon, it wasn't like that was spectacular numbers. In 29 minutes in his junior season, he averaged 11 points. He averaged 9 rebounds. He averaged 2 assists. But he averaged over 2 blocks per game. He averaged almost 1.5 steals per game. He was almost at 2 assists per game in that time as well. I said 1.8 assists, said that already. He didn't shoot the 3-ball very well, but he was super efficient, shooting 64% from the field and 70% from the line. Yeah, these are all good numbers. This year, his advanced stats are through the roof. He's got a win shares per 48 of 0.22, and for those of you unaware, win shares per 48, if you're at 0.1, that's league average. His box score plus minus is 6.5. A box score plus minus of 5 is like an all-NBA player. I think the highest box score plus minus was maybe 10 or 12. Eights and that, they're numbers that LeBron puts up. Now, of course, it's in limited minutes. He's got a true shooting of 69%, a PER of 21. His defensive box score plus minus is through the roof. He's got a VORP of 1, which is a value over replacement player. A replacement player is minus 2. He is at 1. So this is how good that he is. He contributes an extra point per 100 possessions to his team. And that's fantastic for a rookie. But we have to be realistic. He's not going to take on a big usage role. That's not going to increase unless there are injuries. And is he going to start playing 25 or not? I think that's an unrealistic thing to expect. But he is a must-own guy. His value in dynasty leagues is really high. I think that he's the starting center next season, and I think he plays 25 to 27 minutes a night next season, and he could be easily at 1.5 steals, 2 blocks, 7 rebounds, 65% guy with 4 assists. That heat me, maybe 8 points, but he can do that on this Warriors team. He's a guy that he might demand like a $18 million a year contract in 2 years' time because he's a second-round pick. He doesn't have that 4-year rookie-scale contract, and the Warriors might not be able to match that. They're going to have similar discussions with Pat McCaw this season after his second season. So we'll see what happens with Jordy Bell. He could go to another team and really flourish. I've got him in a 30-team dynasty league, and I am valuing him very, very highly. I've got him in quite a few leagues, actually. I'm valuing him fairly highly. I am valuing him as a future top 50 asset, probably even higher. And I think you should as well. Everything prior to the draft was leaning towards him being able to be a really impactful fantasy guy. He's then translated it to on-the-court numbers, which has been able to force him into a consistent 20-minute-a-role rotation night every night on the best team in NBA history. So that's a positive. And then once Zaza's gone, which will be... he might not be gone next season, but I think that Bell's in that role next season. You add another 5 to 6 minutes on that, and you're locking in a top 50, top 60 sort of player. The sky's the limit for this guy in terms of what he can do. If he can add scoring, if he can average 15 a game, we're talking top 20 upside. Now, that might be tough for him to do, and I'm just looking at his basketball reference page, and his nicknames are just horrible. The Eraser? What the... That? Maybe. Swatter Boy? If anybody in the world calls Jordan Bell Swatter Boy, please, can you send him my way? That is a horrendous nickname. I haven't thought of a good one for him yet. But Swatter Boy's just horrendous. Please don't call him Swatter Boy. He's almost turning 23. He's 23 in like 4 days' time on January the 7th. That's almost his birthday. So he's not young. He's still got a couple of years of improvement in him. But I think that we are talking about a top 20 upside guy for fantasy that probably won't get there, but can have multiple top 50 seasons. And that should get you very wet in your panties. Let's talk DFS. Let's go perfect DFS for the Wednesday slate. FanDuel, the Iron Shoulder, 46.5, and DeLon Wright, 61.1. DeMar had 56.6, and Gaz Harris, 47.3. Gerald Green, 36.2, and Kevin Durant, 57.2. Dwighty Powell, 35.6. Tone Davis, 63, and Gortat at 36.6 for a big total of 440.1. And that cost $59,600. Also, DraftStars, the Australian site, your 400 target's never going to go off. If it didn't go off today, I don't know how it's ever going to go off. DraftKings, DeLon 61.25, DeRozan 56.25, Justin Holiday 41, Mick Beasley 43.25, Olynyk 47.75, The Iron Shoulder 51.25, Tone Davis 62.75, and Gaza Harris 49 for a total of 412.5, and that cost $50,000. Now, talked so much today already, and you're waiting for the DFS portion of the show, and it's here, but this is a horrendous DFS slate. It's a two-gamer. It is definitely sit-out potential. Don't get involved in this slate. I implore you, and I know that you're all degenerate DFS players. I don't want to use the word gamble, but you're all degenerate gamblers who are playing this, and if you're playing this slate, that's what you are. So I put it out today. I said a tweet. DFS is horrible for tomorrow, and multiple people replied to me, that's all right, golf starts. Huh? What's that got to do with anything? Golf starts. So I can't get into playing DFS in sports that I know nothing about, and I have to know a lot about them. So I know a lot about the AFL. I don't play AFL DFS. I don't play cricket DFS. I don't play NFL DFS. I don't play anything because I don't know enough to know what I'm doing. And I sure as shit, I'm not going to play golf DFS. I play NBA DFS, or I do NBA because I like the NBA and I know what's happening in the NBA. Don't play this slate. It's a bad slate, especially for cash. It's a horrible slate for cash. Anyway, on FanDuel, the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. There is no spread currently out for this one. We don't know the status of Omri Caspi, Andre Iguodala, and Nene. I don't think Nene is going to play. He's pretty much ruled out already this morning due to rest and then banged his knee today, so I don't think he's going to be in. So we're going to have some more minutes for guys like Tariq Black. If Iguodala and Caspi miss, it's more minutes for Durant, it's more minutes for Clay, and it's more minutes for Pat McCaw and Uncle P. Nick Young as well. At point guard, Chris Paul is at 10,400. Didn't do a huge amount today in that Orlando game, didn't need to. 10,400 is a lot. The only reason you'd think about doing it is just that you need someone to make up your salary on a two-game slate, so I'd consider him here. He's not in the greatest spot. He's struggled against the Warriors in the past, and that price is a little bit prohibitive in my opinion, especially when you can get Steph at 10,800, and I would absolutely take Steph at 10,800. I think he's a strong cash guy. I think he's a tournament player as well. Bryonte Weber, who's going to get some playing time, but he's not a big stat guy at all, so not really that interested there. At shooting guard, Clay's at 6,800. He dropped 45 today. Really like his GPP upside. I think you could even consider him in cash on this slate, especially if we have Iguodala missing some time. He might have to play some extra minutes. Well, Eric Gordon at 6,900. Had 34 today in a limited appearance, only the 30 minutes. He'll get more than that. I think he's a worthwhile player to use. Not the best guy out there. I'd rather take Tomo at 68, but Gordo at 69 is definitely, he's got some appeal, of course. Uncle P is at minimum for a reason. At small forward, Durant's at 10.5, probably a little bit expensive, just tough to find those cheaper guys around him, especially for cash, but he absolutely has tournament appeal and 60-point upside, so we like him. Iguodala at 3,800, I wouldn't get into even if he plays, and I really do like Trevor Ariza at 6,000. It might not seem sexy at that sort of a price, but again, I feel fairly confident about his level of production, which is exactly what we want here. Gerald Green at 4,100, had a monster today. Could happen again. There is an element of risk, but I think with Marmute still out, I think we do have to go with Gerald, especially with, I think, the Warriors running, or the Warriors forcing the Rockets to run some smaller lineups. You're going to get some more minutes for Gerald as Trevor Ariza pushes up to the four. So 4,100 is a strong, strong option for him. PJ Tucker's at 44. He might get big minutes, but he just does nothing in terms of stats. At power forward, Ryan Anderson's at 4,300, a nice 28-pointer for Rhino. I have zero faith in him. That's his highest score in his last five games. Sure, in a tournament, no worries. He could also get absolutely toasted by the Warriors defensively. Now, he played a lot of minutes in the first game they played each other this season, but I don't put massive faith in that. I love Draymond here at 78. I think that's a strong, strong cash play. Probably one of the guys that I'd start off a cash lineup with. And then you got Jordy Bell at 55, which is just too high, I believe, unless Zaza or Draymond happens to sit out. And they were questionable before today's game, but they got through it all. Dave West at 3,700 or Tariq Black at 39. I don't really see much with either of them. At center, you've got Clint Capella at 7,500. He barely played in that first game against the Warriors. That is a concern. I believe that he can get out there and guard the perimeter and switch onto Durant and switch onto Curry without getting roasted, much better than what Ryan Anderson can. But he's at 7,500, so that makes him definitely a risky cash option and probably one I wouldn't want to use at all in cash. But again, limited options, limited starting centers on this slate, so you could consider Clint Capella a guy to look at. On DraftKings, it's a little bit different. Jordy Bell, I think, is more of a GPP option there. He's at 5,000, while Rhino's at 4,300. Both of those guys have some tournament upside. I love Clay at 6,100. I think that's cashy. I think it's tournamenty, while Chris Paul is much more appealing at 9,800. I would consider Chris Paul for cash at that price, but much like on FanDuel, I can get Steph at a stupidly low price. 8,400 for Steph Curry. Bang that in. That is the one that I want to start with on DraftKings. Durant's at 87, and that's also stupid, stupid cheap. So I'd be looking at him. And Draymond at 6,600. Pretty much all of the DraftKings guys have had their prices reduced, unless their name is Chris Paul or Jordan Bell. So they're guys that you tend to steer away from, but get the value in those other spots. Trevor Ariza at 5,300 is also a really strong cash play. Over on DraftKings, the last game of the night, it is the Oklahoma City Thunder, the LA Clippers. The spread is even. The total is 213. Robertson is out. For the Clippers, it's Austin Rivers, who is questionable. If he is out, expect more Lou Williams, get a bit more Sindarius Thornwell in there, some Juwan Evans perhaps, maybe some more CJ Williams. And Alex Sabrina is questionable for the Thunder, but he'd been limited anyway, so I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure he's going to play, even if he is healthy, to be honest, with that groin issue. At point guard, Milosh is at 5,900. I think there's some upside there for Milosh. He's starting to look a bit better. 26 points in that last game. He's more of a tournament-y guy. While Rivers at 5,300. If he is ready to go, I'm absolutely fine with using Austin at 5,300. Russ is at 12,500, which is way too expensive, in my opinion, for cash. You can get Steph at $3,000 less. It's a back-to-back for Westbrook, as it is for the Warriors and Rockets guys as well. But at that price, you have to go with a lot of cheap options on this sort of a slate. So I think at 12,500, it's a tough one to get behind. Well, Fatface Ray Felton's at 4,100. I can see a 25-point performance out of Ray. He had 10 assists in today's game. At shooting guard, Lou Williams, 7,500. Love that for cash. Love that for tournament. CJ Williams was strong in that last game as well. He's at 3,700. I would imagine that if Rivers is out, he will start again, and he might start even if Rivers is in, pushing Wes Johnson back to the bench. I don't think that he's a strong cash guy, though. Terry Ferguson, prior to today's game, he'd averaged 2 points in his last five games. He is at 3,500 minimum salary. We would have to expect he starts again. Shooting guards against the Clippers have had big games. I think you have to use Terry Ferguson, and maybe getting a Fergo-Russell Westbrook combo enables you to use that 12,500 for Russ in cash. Having at least this one minimum salary option here is really useful. So Terry Ferguson, his cash ownership is going to be 90%, 95%. It is going to be absolutely through the roof. So if he bombs in a cash lineup, it's probably not going to be too much of a problem because everyone's going to have him in there. Small forwards, Paul George, 8,400. I like this for cash for Georgie. He's got a really good record against the Clippers. I guess the problem we have to look at is the Thunder. The LA back-to-back can be a problem. The potential of the LA nightlife maybe claiming a team or two here, that could impact Paul George. Back home, back in LA is an issue, but I feel okay about him at 8,400. It's not like he had to exert himself too much in that game against the Lakers. Houston is at minimum salary, but there's a real reason for that. At power forward, Jeremy Grant, minimum, no. Blakey Griffin, 8,700. I love that for Blake Griffin at 8,700. He has got a fantastic record against the Thunder. He's already averaging 42 in the last three games since he's come back from that injury. I love using him on FanDuel. That's a super price. While Mallow at 61, I don't feel great about his floor. I feel good about his upside, so he is a tournament player here. At center, it's DeAndre at 7,300, and I am totally in on DeAndre there. I think it's a strong cash floor. Him and Blake are very, very strong options on FanDuel, and they're good for tournaments as well. And then you've got Steve-O, Adams at 6,500. I would much prefer DeAndre, but if you can't afford it, Adams at 6,500 is not a bad guy, despite some of his recent performances being a bit lacking. On DraftKings, Russ is at 11.3, so that's much more accessible for cash. I'd still probably lean more towards tournaments, but he is absolutely cash usable on DraftKings, while Ray Felton at 38 is a little bit tournament upside-y. And of course, you've got Terry Ferguson, Tezza, at minimum salary, going to be stupidly high-owned in cash. Blake at 82 is great. Paul George at 7,000 is stupendous. That is really, really good. DeAndre at 6,700 is also a great play, while Milos at 5,100, I think, is strong for cash with a little bit of tournament upside there for him as well. Lou Williams also at 7,200 is pretty tough to go past on DraftKings. Let's go through the other sites now. Yahoo for some tournament guys. Lou Williams, Milosh, Jordy Bell, Ryan Anderson, Fatface, Ray Felton, Terry Ferguson, and the table Montrezl Harrell. And for cash, it's CJ Williams, Gerald Green, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, Clay Thompson, DeAndre, Paul George, and Chris Paul. For Moneyball tournaments, Westbrook, Clay, Milosh, Jordan Bell, PJ Tucker, Terry Ferguson, and for cash, Chrissy Paul, Kevin Durant, Steph, Blake, Paul George, Draymond, DeAndre, Gordo, Trevor Ariza, and Gerald Green. And on DraftStars, tournaments, Chrissy Paul, Kevin Durant, Anderson, Jordy Bell, Ray Felton, The Table, Terry Ferguson, and Briante Weber. And for cash, it's Westbrook, Curry, George, Draymond, DeAndre, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, Milosh, Trevor Ariza, and Gerald Green. Don't forget to check out our sponsor, which is mybookie.ag, to get the match deposit bonus of up to 50%. So go and use that promo code LOCKEDONNBA on mybookie.ag. Check out the rest of the Locked On podcast network and follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. You can also follow me, Josh Lloyd, on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. I am also the lead analyst, fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. So check out all our season-long projections, tools, and daily fantasy stuff. If you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. Tell me how sexy my beard looks and how much you want to rub oil all over it. That would be a great review. You can also find us on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube. Subscribe, thumbs up, leave a comment. That would be great. Another long podcast. My voice is done. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jim Harden.